Hey, if you're looking for a great holiday gift for the Boston Celtics fan in your life, try my book, The Boston Celtics All-Time All-Stars, The Best Players at Each Position for the Seas. I went all the way back to the beginning of Boston Celtics history and picked two players at each position, plus two wild cards and two coaches, to put together an all-star team of all Boston Celtics greats. It was a very difficult process. I left some very important people off, but in the end, I think I've put together an amazing all-star team from Boston Celtics history. So go to wherever you can buy books, online or in stores, The Boston Celtics All-Time All-Stars, The Best Players at Each Position for the Seas, is now available. So go ahead and get a copy for the Boston Celtics fan in your life. Creative uses for the traded player exception, and are the Celtics really still contenders? It's a Mailbag Friday here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Hey there, John Corrales here. I am the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. I really appreciate it. I'm here for you Monday through Friday, so if you're new, if you're listening for the first time, welcome aboard. This is what you're going to get Monday through Friday. I'm dropping a podcast, something you can pop on your way to work, in the shower, at the gym, whatever. I'm here for you. I'm here for you. Every Friday, I've been doing this mailbag podcast, which I've been splitting. Half of it right here is on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Half of it I've been doing on masslive.com. So if your answer is not here, it's there. That's the drill. So I just want to dive right into it and start with Jeff R. Jeff, who after yesterday's podcast, where Jay King, Sam Packard, and I picked most of, well, what we did was we recorded the whole podcast of, we picked every game on the schedule right now, first half of the season. Yesterday was the first half of the podcast. This Friday is the second half of the podcast on Anything Is Potable. But Jeff says, hey, I would appreciate it if the Jays could summarize the past year's predictions, win-loss, and see how you did. Seems like no one ever does this, including player predictions, etc. Jeff, you are correct. No one ever does this. You know why? It's a lot of work, and I don't remember what we picked, and I'm not going back to listen to all those podcasts. I'm just going to assume I was 100% correct and move on. But seriously, I would love to go back. If someone wants to take on the project, I'll tell you what. If someone wants to take on the project after listening to yesterday's podcast and today's podcast on Potable, you want to go back in history. If someone wants to undertake this and actually put wins and losses together, I'll send you something. I'll send you a Celtics gift. I don't know. I'll send you something that's worth $50. Maybe I'll send you $50. But if someone actually wants to go back and find our podcasts and go back and compare the win losses to actual win losses, I'll send you $50. Somehow, something worth $50, or maybe actually $50, or a gift card. I don't know. I'll do it though. Why not? But okay, here's the parameters. I'm just making this up off the top of my head. It's got to be the first person to do it, but completely. And I don't even know how far back we went, but you got to put in the work. And frankly, you should not put in that level of work. Not for $50. That's like 25 cents an hour. That's not a fair deal. You lose in this deal if you do this. I'm saying this because I feel like somebody might. It's not worth your $50. And if you think you're going to do it, just to say, you know what, I'm going to show you. I'm willing to bet you get through a season and a half, and you go, you know what, John was right. Screw this. I'm done. But if you want to put it together, go for it. I'll figure something out. I'll find a way to get Jay and Sam to pitch in. This is like very Trump. I'm going to build a wall. I'm going to make Mexico pay for it. I'm going to give you a $50 gift. I'm going to make Jay King and Sam Packard pay for it. But yeah, whatever. We'll figure it out. It could be beer. It could be something. Whatever. We'll find a way to get you that compensation. Hell of a start to the Mailbag podcast. Magley asks, I've read some articles stating the Celtics are expecting Nesmith to contribute right away. What have you seen or heard about how he has performed in the first couple of days of practice, especially with his three-point shooting? Now, I bring this up right now because Thursday, we actually heard. I asked Brad Stevens, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum. They were the three people available. I asked the three of them, what have you seen from the rookies? Who stood out? Now, Peyton Pritchard was the guy, but that's the first name that was mentioned from Marcus Smart. But Jason Tatum also mentioned Aaron Nesmith. Like, he mentioned Nesmith. He's like, yeah, he can shoot. And he did like the, he's strong. Like, he made like a little flexing motion. He's like, he's strong. Like Nesmith is like low key combat muscle team, like team combat muscle. And he's just coming in out of college. Nesmith can potentially grow in like next year. When we're starting the season, my story could be like Aaron Nesmith put on 15 pounds of muscle because he's young, and that's what happens when you're young and growing into your body. You can put on a lot of muscle fast. But by all accounts, and this is, by the way, the time of year where, oh, positivity is just reigning supreme. Nothing is wrong in the first week of training camp. Nothing. Everything is great. Rookies look awesome. The veterans come in. They look great. They feel healthy. They feel strong. Oh, man. There's no more positive place than the first year of the first week of an NBA camp. Oh, it's the best. It's paradise. It's utopia. Let's see what happens after the second week when we have to go through a couple of games and we go, oh, Aaron Nesmith went 0 for 6 in his first preseason game. Okay, but here's what I realistically think, and I did this podcast a couple days ago. Like, Aaron Nesmith has to completely suck not to get these minutes. So I actually do think that Nesmith has the ability to contribute right away. He's a 6'6 forward with a 6'10 wingspan. I think it's required to say that every time you talk about Aaron Nesmith, or at least every time I do. That's the type of versatile forward that you hope can pick up defensive principles right away. And then add to, on top of that, him saying, I'm an absolute sniper. So far, seems like the Celtics can confirm that Nesmith is a pretty damn good shooter. So everything I've heard from these guys so far, it confirms that. We'll have to see it for ourselves. Under these circumstances, it's just so hard to say for sure what is actually happening because I can't see it. I can't see Nesmith shooting after practice. And this is the thing that pisses me off the most about having to do this under COVID circumstances. I'm sitting here in my office at home. And normally I would be standing in the RBAC Center watching guys shoot afterwards. And right now I would love to be telling you, hey, I watched these guys shooting afterwards, and oh my God, Aaron Nesmith won these shooting competitions and he hit 12 threes in a row or whatever. Like that, I want to see it. I can't express to you how much seeing things with my own eyes, and it's like the little things. I want to see Nesmith shoot. I want to see his form up close. But I want to see guys react. Are they surprised by what they're seeing? are they kind of like, damn, man, are they, if there's like this resignation, like, man, God, it's just another one. That defeated look from players on the team is what tells me this dude's been shooting like this all day long. And at this point, they're just seeing these things going. It's like, oh, God, again, seriously, again. It's like me losing at blackjack when I'm at the casino. And it's like the dealer flipped over. The dealer dealt himself a 12 and dealt and flipped over a 21. I'm like, oh, God, again. Come on. It's those reactions. I don't get to see those. So we'll see. We'll have to wait and see. I'll see. I'll try to look for it when it happens on TV. It's the best I can tell you. But like, I know that there are bigger problems in the world. Like, I'm not sitting there saying like, oh, my problems, like, this is not the biggest problem to have. But just in the context of my job, it bothers me that I can't see all of the little things that are going on after practice that feed me information. So Jeffrey asks, hey, what about DeMar DeRozan? His salary meets the traded player exception. Do we go after him if the Spurs suck and maybe dangle them Robert Williams with minutes being so difficult to pick up once Tristan Thompson is back? So the thing about DeMar DeRozan and why this doesn't necessarily work, the Boston Celtics are hard capped. And they're hard capped at just about $139 million. Their current roster is at 118.5. But it's really like 120 or so, because currently I'm looking at this cap sheet and it's all just adding up Jaylen Brown and those numbers. But Jaylen Brown has what is known as, he's got incentives, and there are incentives that you can reach, and there are incentives that are unlikely. And he has probably a couple million dollars worth of unlikely incentives per year, like winning the MVP. But hard cap wise, they have to count that, because right now, during the course of the season, you have no idea if he's going to win the MVP. It's unlikely. That's why it's an unlikely incentive. And it doesn't count in the cap because it's unlikely. Who believes that Jaylen Brown is going to win MVP? But it is possible. It is possible. It's not probable. It's possible. So some of these unlikely incentives, you have to account for them, because the teams who are hard capped absolutely cannot, under any circumstances, go one penny over that hard cap at any point of the season. It's unlike the tax line, where the Celtics could theoretically be over the tax line for the entire season and then on the last day make a move. I don't know what it would be, but somehow make a move to get under the tax in the last days of the season. And when all of the accounting is done, this is an extreme example. They could find a way, not the last day of the season, but like somewhere over the course of the season, they could be over the tax and then get under the tax. And then when the accounting is done, they could say, oh yeah, their payroll is under the tax. So you can be over that line for some point and then under it for long enough where you're under it. The hard cap doesn't work that way. Not one day, not one second can you be over it. So they have to take those hard cap, the unlikely incentives into play. All of that is to say that the Celtics have about, I would say, $18 million under the hard cap to spend. And DeMar DeRozan makes 27.7. It's not to say that they can't go for DeMar DeRozan. It's to say that they're going to have to clear a lot of space to get DeMar DeRozan. And I don't think DeMar DeRozan is the guy that you clear that kind of space for. So just, I say all of that just to let you know what the parameters are and set your expectations. If you're looking for guys where the Celtics might spend that exception, that's your expectation. Don't look at 28.5. Look at 18 or 19. The Celtics can get to 18 or 19 pretty easily. Even if that like licks the top of the hard cap, they can move, like you said, Robert Williams. They can make a couple of moves. Cut Javonte Green. His contract is non-guaranteed into February. There are moves to kind of get to where they need to be, but not enough moves where they're going to clear $9 million or $10 million. That's just too much. So more mailbag questions. Another traded player exception, including, this is an interesting one, something we haven't talked about with the traded player exception. That's coming up next. Now, we are getting to a point here where the Boston Celtics are trying to break through walls. They are working very hard. They're trying to get through these mental and physical walls. And I'm going to tell you that Built Go can be part of a solution if that's something that you're trying to do. It's a healthy replacement for your energy drink, and it's not fake. It's lasting. It's natural. I've used it before, and it tastes great. It's a very convenient 1.5-ounce package, very small. It gets me through these walls. When you're sitting there outside of the gym and going, do I really want to go in there? Or considering the COVID times, maybe you're at home and you're wondering, do I really want to put this workout video on? Do I really want to do this? Built Go, very simple, 1.5 ounces. This energy gel will help you break through that wall. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. The flavors are delicious. Peanut butter, honey, chocolate, coconut, and chocolate mint. Those are awesome flavors. The energy gel is combined with collagen protein, so it's fast absorbing. It gets into your system really fast. It's easy on your stomach. It's loaded with great stuff like beta-alanine, B3, honey, B6, B12 vitamins, a kick of caffeine to ignite your work. Plus, the collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. So not only are you getting this boost to break through that wall, it actually kind of make you look better. So why not give it a shot? Just go to BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED. You'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED. You're going to get 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. Hey, NBA basketball returns today. There are preseason games scheduled, and the Celtics return to the floor next week. So you must subscribe to the Locked On Celtics podcast to get all of the reaction. Everything that the Celtics say leading up to those games, after those games, I've got it right here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. It is a daily podcast, Monday through Friday. Pop it on in the morning, on your way to work, on your way to the gym, at the gym, on your run, whatever it is. I'm going to have everything from preseason basketball next week. So be sure to subscribe. Back to the mailbag. Joe in Maryland. I like this question, Joe. I like it so much, I have answered it on Mass Live and the podcast. But he asks, I had a thought that I don't think I've heard anyone talk about regarding trade exceptions. I think that this puts Danny in a good position to acquire draft assets by being a facilitator of multi-team trades for teams that need to dump a player to make salaries work. I think it's more likely to happen with the Cantor or Poirier exceptions than the big one for Hayward. But do you think that ownership would be willing to acquire a player in a situation like that and immediately cut them if it meant picking up a couple of assets? So let's lay this out. A team like Oklahoma City, a team with cap space One of the ways they use this space is to facilitate trades. They can take a player into their cap space, and there's no need to match salaries. It's really useful in helping facilitate trades between two teams that really want to do business with one another. This exception can serve as cap space. It works the exact same way. It's not Boston's number one option. Now, Boston let Gordon Hayward go. They have $28.5 million of a trade exception. They also have a $5 million Enes Kanter exception. They have a $2-plus million Poirier exception. Three different ways to acquire players. So they can use them all in similar ways. But option one is to acquire a player. Now, as I said before the break, they can't acquire a $28.5 million player. So option one, I think, is find someone that makes somewhere in the mid-teens. We're looking at, on the high end, we're looking at Aaron Gordon. Everybody's talking, like, Aaron Gordon seems to be like the consensus, oh, this guy could fit. This guy could do some work here. And that's great. Or the lower end, a Terrence Ross. Obviously, we're picking on Orlando, but whatever. Terrence Ross makes like 13 or so. So somewhere in that range, while the Celtics are hard capped, because the goal is to get a player back. So I think plan A is get a player like that back. And then in the summer when the hard cap goes away, you can use the rest of the trade exception because you can break it up into pieces like that and maybe acquire somebody else. I think the best case scenario for the Celtics, the most realistic best case scenario, plan A, is get a guy who makes the mid-teens and then another guy who makes the mid-teens in the summer. And now you've got two players. And this goes back to the early conversations I was having on this podcast about Gordon Hayward before. You split Gordon Hayward. You take Gordon Hayward and that big salary and you flip him into two useful players. And that's a success. Plan A is to do that. Plan B would be to use the whole trade exception for a player, which would mean either doing something unlikely, like trading a bunch of guys to clear up that space. But hey, look, you never know what the season's going to bring. Maybe somewhere in January or February, something's going to open up and a player's going to become available. And Danny Ainge goes, oh, yep. Got to get him, and he is willing to do that. It's unlikely, though. More likely, this plan B goes into next summer, and something like that opens up. I don't think that's very likely. Plan C is to do what Joe said. Okay, things aren't working out the way the Celtics have hoped. You couldn't get somebody at the trade deadline. The trade market is not really coming together in July or August. So plan C, let's see who's out there making moves. Let's see if we can facilitate a trade and have another team pay the Celtics a first round pick, a protected first round pick, one of those first round picks that's so heavily protected that it becomes 2 seconds, something like that, for taking in a guy that fits into that $28.5 million. So it doesn't just expire. Why? Why did the Celtics do that? Two reasons. One, you get those picks. And even a couple of seconds are worth doing business like this. Because those 2 seconds can get added to another deal. You'd rather have the assets than not. And even if they don't, they could become cheap players that you take a flyer on, or draft in stashes, or whatever. They're useful. The other thing is that extends the trade exception a little bit. Now, maybe not the full 28.5, but I don't even know. I'm not even looking at salaries across the league. But let's say a $20 million player or so is about to get dumped, and the Celtics take him on for one of those heavily protected picks. If they can get a guy that is expiring, if they can get a guy that another team wants to dump because, hey, we need to get whatever trade. If the Celtics can pick up an expiring contract, well, now you've got a big contract of a player that you don't really care about, and that can be used as a salary match. So, in essence, that $20 million guy or so, whatever he makes, becomes like a human trade exception. I hate dehumanizing guys like this, but that's what this becomes. He becomes an end-of-bench guy. I don't know how useful of a player he is, but it's pretty obvious that at some point he's going to get traded. And instead of the trade exception expiring, the Celtics have a guy on their bench that can be used to match salary in a trade. So maybe you don't have to give up everything that you would normally give up in a deal. Maybe you could package players. Instead of giving up Jaylen Brown, you use this guy that you acquired and you can maybe convince a team. Maybe Romeo Langford comes back and he looks good. And you can say, hey, look, Romeo is a future. Like, he's gone through some bad luck, but he's got a future to him. Take Romeo. Take Nesmith. He's shooting the hell out of the ball. Take Pritchard. Take whatever. Like, take Grant. Here's a few picks. Young players, promising players. Here's a few picks. Give us this guy that you're trying to trade. Maybe that works. I'm not saying it will, but rather than letting the trade exception expire, you have a guy that becomes matching salary and actually becomes a little bit more flexible because now it's not limited to 28.5. That 20 paired with some other guys now brings that up higher. So there is value. There is a lot of value to what Joe is talking about here. I think it's still plan C. I don't think that's the first couple of things the Celtics want to do. But if those things don't materialize, and it's certainly possible that they might not, this plan from Joe is something worth watching for. So shout out to Joe for a great suggestion. Donald, what do you think our chances are of getting back to the Eastern Conference Finals and potentially the finals? And also, am I the only one who thinks the Nets' chances are being overblown? KD might not be the same player, and Kyrie has a bad injury history. All it takes is one injury, and their chances are out the window. This goes along with the question from Patrick, who sent me a very nice email, and I won't read it, but Patrick, thank you very much for a great email, who asks, with the East getting tougher and the departure of Hayward, do you think the Celtics are still contenders? Contenders? Okay. Are they at the top tier of contenders? No. Could the Celtics plausibly win the NBA championship? Yes. So that makes them contenders. But there are probably a handful of teams that you can think of. You could probably rattle off, both LA teams, Denver, maybe Milwaukee. I don't know if Brooklyn or Philly. I put Brooklyn and Philly both ahead of the Celtics on paper right now. So the Celtics have a lot of work to do. That thing on paper can flip pretty quickly. And that goes back to what Donald was saying. But so the Celtics are contenders. The Celtics are in the mix. They're just on the low end of the mix. So some things have to go right and some things have to go wrong somewhere else. But the Celtics are in that mix. So I think getting to the Eastern Conference Finals is certainly possible. Okay, so let me lay out why. Why do I think all of this stuff? Here's where the Celtics are to me. Jason Tatum can take a leap forward, and I think he will. I think Jason Tatum will have a year that puts him into the MVP conversation. So that's one element that needs to happen. I think Jaylen Brown has a very strong shot at being an all-star this year. That, I think, needs to happen. I think both of those things are very possible. But the Celtics bench is very thin, so they need Aaron Nesmith to come through. They might need something from Peyton Pritchard. They need Semi Ojeleye to do something. They need Grant Williams to take a leap forward. I mean, these are a lot of things. The best case scenario for the Celtics, and when we do our Locked On NBA season preview, I'll lay all of that out, and I'll talk about that later. But the Celtics' best case scenario is certainly a trip to the finals, and there are very few teams that have that best case scenario. The more likely scenario to me is kind of what happened last season. A get through the first round, really fight in the second round, fall short in the third round. I think that just makes the most sense. And it's not for lack of belief, because I do believe the Celtics can get past the second round or the third round. They can get into the NBA Finals. The Celtics certainly have a non-zero chance of winning the NBA championship. If you were to take a basket and say, here are all the teams that have some chance of winning the NBA championship, the Celtics are in that basket, but the Lakers are the defending champions. And as much as it pains you to hear it, they got better. They did a good job this offseason. Now we'll have to see. All of this has the caveat. We'll have to see it in practice, but they did a good job this season. And I will say, as I said on the Locked On NBA podcast this past Wednesday, don't be fooled if their early returns on the Lakers looks bad, because they're going to rest LeBron a lot. They're going to rest Anthony Davis a lot. It may not look good in LA, but LA is going to be better. I'm sorry to say it, but that's the reality. And the one thing I'm not going to do on this podcast is lie to you about what I think is going on in the NBA. The Clippers have a strong chance to be better. The Nuggets have a strong chance to be better. The West is full of really good teams. So the Celtics have a long road ahead of them. This is a tough year. It depends on a couple of things. Tatum making the leap. Brown making the leap. Who do the Celtics get with that traded player exception? Can they add somebody in the middle of the year that changes the calculus on this? That would completely change everything about what we're talking about. There's also the competition. Donald is right. An injury in Brooklyn changes everything. But right now, I like what Brooklyn has done. I like adding Steve Nash as the coach. I like who they've added on their staff, that you can split up the offensive and defensive responsibilities. I like the fact that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who are both kind of like existential guys, can talk to Steve Nash on a basketball level that they relate to, that he's an equal to them. And I think those two guys in particular don't feel like there are a lot of equals to them. And I feel like they can look at Steve Nash and say, okay, you're one. You're one of them. So that means a lot to what Brooklyn is doing. Like, what Brooklyn did and what Philly did are two things that those teams needed. They added a staff that can speak to those guys in a language that they respect. In Philly, they added structure. I think Doc and Daryl, I think those guys can add a structure and responsibility and accountability that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid haven't had. Like, that's all important. So that's why I put the Celtics kind of behind those guys, because the Celtics bench is thin, and I need to see, at least in the first couple of weeks, what the Celtics really have in reality. And if the things I believe in theory about Brooklyn and Philly are true, I very easily can be wrong about those teams. That's I acknowledge that completely. But right now, that's where I feel. So I don't think the Nets' chances are being overblown, but I do think that the Nets' chances are tenuous. So that's how I feel about all of that. Okay, gonna take a break. When I come back, player comps, historical player comps about what these guys that we have on this team in Boston can be. That's coming up next on the Locked On Celtics podcast. sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Hey, the NBA season's like a week and a half away, and the Locked On NBA podcast will get you ready with a special week of shows beginning December 14th. That's Monday. Get ready. Previews of every team, division by division, from all 30 of our Locked On local experts, that includes me, with previews of every team, waiver wire additions from the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, rookies to watch from Chad Ford, and predictions on each division from Rejecting the Screen. Subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you found this podcast. Moving on into the mailbag, the final stretch, home stretch. Tim, this is a great question. I love this question. He says, I need some optimism in 2020. Other than Kemba being healthy, I think the best and most fun development this year for the Seas would be if the foursome of Time Lord, Romeo, Pritchard, and Nesmith all emerged as legit low-end starters, high-end role players. That's true. It could make us serious contenders now and give us hope for an extended run for us going forward. So my question, for each of the four, name the NBA player, past or present, that you think that you'd like to see them develop into. It needs to be semi-realistic. And then Tim gives the answer. Here's a correct answer. Time Lord, John Saladi. Romeo, Bruce Bowen. Pritchard, Jerry Seasting. Can never get that out right. Nesmith, Dale Ellis. What do you think? So, Robert Williams, John Sally. You know, look, seriously, I just want Time Lord to be Clint Capella from the Rockets days. Set a pick, roll, catch a lob, and then go play defense. It's that simple. We don't have to get complicated. I love the Sally reference, but Clint Capella from the Rockets days. It's simple. It's very easy. Romeo, Bruce Bowen. Okay, I can see that. Trevor Ariza is the name that popped into my head. A defensive guy. I think Romeo is going to have to play a lot more defense in the pros than he did in college. But a guy that can hit shots, defend multiple positions. He's smaller than Ariza. But Bruce Bowen is in that same mold. Kind of like it. Bruce Bowen's a little dirty. I don't want that. So I'm leaning more Trevor Ariza-ish. That makes sense? I love that the white kid gets the white comp, that he's going to be Jerry Seasting. I'm going to go to Puerto Rico with J.J. Barea. I think that's a good comp. I think if he became Barea, that would be amazing. Because every team's fan base in the NBA will tell you, oh man, Barea kills us. And you feel like it can't be true because the guy averaged 9 points a game over the course of his career. And even during this latest stretch, he averaged no more than 11.6 points per game. So how many teams could he really kill? But he's a guy who shot pretty well from three. He had some good seasons, had some down seasons. But smaller guy, annoying as hell. I'm going Barea. It's just, there's a little more flavor to Barea. There's a little more energy to Barea. So I'm going with that. And Aaron Nesmith, Dale Ellis. Tim, you are right on the money, man. If Nesmith develops into Dale Ellis, then throw a parade for Danny Ainge. That's a great comp. That's a great get. Dale Ellis had a stretch there. I mean, first of all, Dale Ellis had a stretch where he was averaging like 25 points a game. So if Nesmith can become that, then hell yeah. Dale Ellis was part of those really, really fun Seattle teams. Those Seattle teams were just of the late 80s, mid 80s, late 80s. Those teams were so much fun. But Dale Ellis, yeah, man, that would be great. Even if we got Dale Ellis of like the early 90s, the 30-year-old Dale Ellis, that dude was still hitting 40% from three. Dale Ellis played, what'd he play? Like 15, 16 seasons in the NBA? This dude, in his, at 37 years old, shot 46% from three. So, yeah, give me all of that. Give me all of that for Boston. That would be fantastic. Thomas asks, which trio would make more all-star games over the next 5 years? Kemba, Tatum, and Brown, or the guys who left? Kyrie, Hayward, and Horford. Horford's not making any more all-star teams. Kyrie is, for sure, I think. Hayward, I believe that Hayward can. I think he's got at least one more all-star season in him. I might say two, but I think that situation is going to be good for him. So Hayward will have at least one. Over 5 years, that's one. Kyrie, you got to believe that he could get up to five. But let's say four. I think Kyrie is going to have like four. He's just too popular. Like, even if you were like, oh my God, he's not great. He's not blah, blah, blah. Fan vote is a huge part of this. And player vote is part of this. Players love Kyrie. Fans love Kyrie. Kyrie is getting in. But let's say four and one for Hayward. I'm giving Hayward one. It's five. So 5 years out of that. Kemba, Tatum, and Brown. Well, Kemba's not making it. I think Kemba might be done making all-star teams. He's not making it this year. He's not going to play enough. So it depends on next year. Can he get next year? Can he get the year after that? We're getting into his 30s. So I think Kemba might have played his last all-star game. Tatum, I'm giving him all five. There's no way Tatum's not making all five all-star teams. So I think Jaylen Brown can make... But okay, let me go back. I'll do what I did with Hayward. I'm sorry, with Kyrie. I'll take one off. So I'll say four. But I still think Jaylen Brown can make at least two. So right there at 6-5. So I think that basically it's not even trios. It's duos. I think Kyrie will make four and Hayward will actually make one, assuming that he doesn't have more bad luck. But I think Jaylen Brown will make more. So Tatum will match Kyrie, but Jaylen Brown will make more than Hayward. So even if he makes three or four or five, doesn't matter. I'll say he'll make at least two. And my answer is the Tatum and Brown duo will make more than the Kyrie, Hayward, and Horford. I think Horford is done making the all-star team. Finally, Emil, who says, who asks, with a shortened season and a heavy regional focus on playing the same team consecutively or within a few games of each other, I feel like coaching is going to be massively more important than previously. Especially now with Doc joining the East, the quality of players in the playoffs, teams getting better, and how we got worked by the zone, can you speak to what Brad Stevens and his staff can do to win the coaching battles? This is super interesting because what does winning the coaching battle mean? Brad Stevens is going to coach this season with the playoffs in mind. He's going to coach this season thinking, how can the Celtics be their best when the playoffs start? That's the goal. It's not about winning every game during the regular season. So, if you're going to judge Brad Stevens by wins and losses during the regular season, you're going to have a more negative opinion of Brad Stevens than someone who's looking at what he's doing and understanding that he's looking towards the playoffs. So I don't think Brad Stevens' coaching job can be fully evaluated until the season is completely over. And so what can he do to win this coaching battle? For me, I'm looking at the priority. Is the priority winning every game during the regular season? It's a 72-game season. Are you trying to win 60? Are you trying to win 50? What are you trying to win? Seeding can be important for sure. And a lot of it depends on, hey, how's Brooklyn? How's Philly? Do those teams live up to some of the things that I've said? What's Milwaukee doing? Did Giannis sign? What's his? Is he getting the extension? What's the pressure on that team? How does that all work out? Look at Miami. Look at Toronto. Haven't talked about those teams. Very good teams. Where are they in this whole mix? So the Celtics certainly need to focus on winning enough games to be in a place where they're comfortable with their road to the playoffs. But they are absolutely not going to do anything that Stevens feels like will jeopardize their health during the playoffs. They will rest guys. There will be points in games where you're like, hey, time to get Jason Tatum back in there, and he's going to not do it, and you're going to freak out. You're going to tweet it out. Hell, I might tweet it out. Be like, I'd love to see some Jason Tatum right now, and he's going to wait 2 more minutes to put Tatum in because Tatum is not going to get his minutes wasted. That's how it goes. So what can he do? I think the only thing that Brad Stevens can do is make sure that this team is healthy and cohesive starting the playoffs. And I'm going to bet that they feel like if this team is healthy and cohesive, seeding probably doesn't matter because at their best, they can beat just about anybody. That's going to be the feeling. And it's going to mean Kemba Walker being 100%. It's going to mean Jason Tatum being 100%. Everybody's 100%. So I say all that to just lay out the expectation. If you're focused on Brad Stevens just winning every game and doing what he can to win every regular season game, I'm going to tell you right now, before any games are played, you're going to get pissed off because, yes, he wants to win those games. He's a very competitive guy. But what he wants to win more than anything is the championship. And so he realizes that a loss here and there along the way, if it is something that will help this team lead to a championship, if he thinks that, which means playing Kemba less, resting Tatum, resting Jaylen, resting Smart, all of that stuff, whatever you can think of. If he thinks all of that stuff is going to be conducive to winning in the playoffs, he'll do it. So it's going to be an interesting season, coaching-wise. And it's going to be, there are going to be a lot of arguments. There are going to be a lot of arguments. I hope there's no argument about subscribing to this podcast. If you're not subscribed, I feel like after this podcast, maybe you say, you know what? I'm going to give this guy a shot. You could always unsubscribe later if you're not happy, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think you're going to subscribe today and be happy that you did and listen every day when this hits your device because it's a Monday through Friday podcast. It's a great podcast, if I may say so myself, to put on as you drive to work, as you do whatever it is that you do in the morning. So I hope you do. Regular listeners, you know I love you. You know I love the emails. I love the comments. I love the tweets. I love the fact that you've given this show a 5-star rating and a good written review. That has made this show the number one Boston Celtics podcast in the world. And that is just awesome. I'm so happy and so thrilled. And hey, by the way, buy my book. If you haven't done that, I've written a book. which freaks me out. I've written a book. The Boston Celtics all-time all-stars, the best players at each position for the Cs. Order it now. It ships in a couple of days. And you can get it in time for Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate where you can give it as a gift or give yourself this gift. It's a fun, quick, easy read, and we can talk about it. Hit me up on Twitter, RedsArmy_John, and we can talk about it. So thank you, everybody, for all of that. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.